Welcome back to the Watch Well podcast, everybody. My name is Parker, and this is my co-host, Nick. Nick, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How was your week?
Great. So Liam is getting into lifting weights and all of that stuff, so couple nights a week we go out into the garage in our home gym and lift weights, and I get to help him out. It's a lot of fun.
Nice.
So that's what I was doing before we came in here.
But. Nice. Cool. Yeah, my week was good. Busy with work and everything. Did a lot of work on the podcast. For those of you guys listening, we have a video podcast as well. It's the same Watch Well podcast. It's just on YouTube. You can come meet us and see our faces, our thumbnails for each episode, each movie review podcast, got a makeover. So all of
those.
Did
you get all of them?
I got them all.
You got them all. All right.
Yeah, unless I missed one, but I'm almost positive I got them all.
They're good too. I like them.
Yeah.
You did well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Took me a few hours, but we made it.
So I actually had one of those thumbnails pop up on my normal YouTube feed.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely, even though, you know, I saw a couple of them beforehand, but it caught my eye for sure.
Perfect.
So
that's the goal.
So hopefully that works for some other people.
Yeah. So, and then just some, you know, ancillary things. If you guys want to support the podcast, we're on Patreon. You can check us out. We're going to start putting links in the description on our video podcast on YouTube and in the descriptions on our, you know, wherever you consume podcast content, so that you can find that easily. Let's see. We're on Facebook, Instagram. Give us a like. Check us out on social media. Connect with us. We want to hear your opinions. We want you to be a part of the conversation. Good discourse is what we're looking for. Did I miss anything, Nick?
No, but before we move on, I thought I'd just say, for anyone that's listening that tried to listen to the Avatar episode,
oh right,
and they went and they couldn't hear anything, you know, or I mean, you could probably hear it. You could hear it on the audio version, but if you came to YouTube and you were looking for that episode, you turned it on, you had video, but you didn't have audio. That's since been fixed. So yeah. If you want to go back, you can go back and the audio will be there. You'll be able to hear and see that whole episode.
Yeah, and I have no idea why that happened. I double-checked the audio on that before I uploaded it, and it worked just fine. So it doesn't matter why. It just matters that it's fixed.
Right.
Yeah, but that Avatar episode was really fun.
It was.
For those of you that didn't get a chance to listen, you should definitely go back, like Nick was saying, because it was a fun conversation about pantheism, and we got a little bit into politics, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit of politics before we talk about the movie tonight. It was good. So we'll be talking about the movie A Quiet Place. A little close to my mic there. Yeah, we'll be talking about the movie A Quiet Place tonight a little bit later. Nick, did you want to open up with anything or...
No, I didn't really have anything in mind. I know we didn't record an episode last week, and that was election week. So we haven't had a chance to talk about, you know, anything related to winners, losers, Congress, balance of power, anything like that. Do you have anything pressing or anything on your mind about all? I'm sure you have something on your mind because you always do, but
yeah.
Anything you feel like is important to talk about or worth saying?
Yeah, I'm actually going to bring this up. Let's see here. For those of you that have Twitter, I'm sure you've noticed that it's been crazy. I was following the governor race in Arizona pretty closely, and right now, they called it for Katie Hobbs. 99% reporting. There's been over 2 million votes. Katie Hobbs right now, with 99% reporting, it says that she's got 1.282 million votes, roughly, a little over that. And then Carrie Lake, 1.265 million votes. But the big thing about that was Maricopa County, and they've had a whole bunch of tabulators that went down in Maricopa County. And why that's important is for Republicans, Election Day is a big deal because Republicans dominate Election Day voting. It's the mail-in ballots that Democrats usually win out on.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have tabulators go down and work schedules and stuff like that, it's a very easy way to skew votes and different things like that. So I've been following that. There's a lot of fishy things going on with that, and in other places too, but that's just really, really bad with what's going with what went on there. I did read a headline saying that that vote will, under Arizona law, it may go to a recount. And okay. I know that they were all over Twitter trying to tell people to cure their ballots and go back in and make sure, look online to make sure that they were counted and they voted correctly. And there's a whole bunch of people that were filming videos and talking about their 2-hour voting process that they had to go through. And so it just kind of, you know, I'm not going to say that there is foul play. I'm not going to say that there is foul play, but it sure looks like it.
Mm.
Just with whatever's going on, especially with what went on in 2020,
yeah,
where, you know, there were reports of just trucks of ballots pulling up in Michigan and then what happened in Pennsylvania. Just crazy stuff. Definitely not, there's not enough convincing evidence one way or the other, but it's not a way to build a lot of confidence in the elections, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you followed any of it? Or
no, I really haven't followed the outside of just checking every once in a while to see who's winning, to see, you know, which way the races are swaying. No, I don't really follow it, but really all that closely. I don't really keep up to date on, you know, the ballots and who's winning at each stage or, you know, anything like that. But I did see a pastor that you and I both kind of follow a little bit, Jeff Durbin. He said that it was either he or his wife went and checked their status and it showed that they hadn't voted yet.
Yeah.
He posted that. I think it was on one of his social media profiles. And I don't know if it was, I can't remember if he was talking about himself or his wife, and he's a pastor in Arizona.
Right.
In the,
right.
Where's Apologia? Mesa? Yeah. Mesa, Arizona?
That sounds something like that. Yeah. Something like
that. Yeah. And I don't know what county that is. I don't know if that's the county that, you know, you mentioned where the machines went down or not.
It's just interesting. I can't remember the statistic, and I don't want to make up a statistic without it, like having it ready in a source or whatever, but the statistic pretty much said that the majority, vast majority of tabulators that had issues were in Republican-dominated voting regions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't really see that in any of the blue voting regions. It's just interesting. You know, makes you wonder. Definitely mm-hmm. makes you wonder. But, I mean, I guess that can lead into a bigger or, I guess, deeper conversation about, you know, Christian voting and... I guess I'd ask you, Nick, what when someone says, like, how should a Christian vote? Like, if you had a new Christian walk up to you at church on Sunday morning, you being an elder and all, how would you answer that question? How should a Christian vote?
And it's just that general?
That general. I mean, we can, as the conversation goes on, we can get a little bit more specific and talk topics if you want to go that way before we talk about the movie. I think it would be interesting to go that way. But if someone just walked up and be like, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm a new Christian and I haven't really read a lot of the Bible yet. I'm working on mm-hmm. it. You know, I'm trying to learn the best I can as quickly as I can. There's only so much I can learn, you know, at the pace that I'm able to go and I really don't want to ruin my vote, and they're coming to you, or at least, or not ruin my vote, but I want to honor God with my vote. How would you guide them?
Well, my first response is to vote for policies that will most align in accordance with your faith. If that's newfound faith, then in accordance with your faith. But one thing is, so that I think you said, I'm talking, it's somebody who's new to the faith, somebody who's a new Christian. They come up and say, who should I vote for? One thing, and I don't know if you might not agree with me handling it this way, but one thing I wouldn't do is say, vote for this person. And that's the right thing to do.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I would just say, look at the issues, compare those to what you know at this point of Scripture, and vote what aligns with Scripture. And maybe you get it wrong, and maybe you get it right. But you're going to continue growing, and your views on these policies and things will shift and change as you grow in Christ. And if you, and I would just let them know that if they have any more detailed questions about that, like a particular issue of some kind, and they want to know what the Bible says about this issue, then I'm more than willing to have that conversation. But if it's just that general broad question, I don't want to be the person just saying, my conscience tells me to vote this way, so I'm demanding you're not being a good Christian unless you vote that way. But I do want to acknowledge that there are actual policies and ramifications of who you vote for. So you should consider those things as much as possible in accordance with your faith. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's great. So then the follow-up question would be, what do you feel you haven't learned yet in relation to certain, certain topics?
Yeah. Dig into certain, like, what questions do you have about policy? What are hesitations about this candidate? What are hesitations about this candidate? You know, like, actually talk about those things. What do they think about this? What do they think about this? And then try your best to compare that to what the Bible says about that particular issue. Because there's never going to be, and I do think there are certain issues that at least a mature Christian, I can't say that a person isn't a Christian if they vote in favor of these issues, but at least a mature Christian should not be voting for, because they should have an awareness and an understanding of what the Bible says about particular abortion being one.
Right.
A true Christian should not ever vote for somebody who will expand access to abortion. That's just the way it is. Like, right. That is clear.
Yeah.
Clear in Scripture. But that doesn't mean that if you vote for somebody that expands abortion, that you weren't a Christian when you voted.
Correct.
Right?
Right. 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 Right.
So I'm not going to put that on anybody, but it does mean that you made a mistake when you voted. Right. So, yeah.
And I think there's something to say, and maybe you disagree with me on this, but, if you're not, if it comes, excuse me, if it comes down to, so we used to be able to vote for a person.
Yeah.
But anymore, it's the party.
Yeah, you and I talked about that a little bit when we just got together and talked last week.
Right. So the party line is really where your vote goes, because that's I mean, they're going to please their constituents and all that. I mean, that's just what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's really now we're getting into the topic of being a one issue voter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really tough.
Mm-hmm.
That's really tough because I think for the vast majority of people, in my opinion, there is a, for lack of a better word, a spectrum of, if you go issue by issue, it's not going to be all right and it's not going to be all left.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. You know what I mean? I mean, you're going to trend one way, you know, a lot of people, center right or center left or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just interesting. If you do the average, then you'll find yourself in one camp of those individual topics. But if you go issue by issue, we're probably all closer than we think. Would you agree?
Oh, for sure. And candidates used to be closer too.
Yeah.
Like you used to have plenty of pro-life Democrats. Right? That used to be a thing. Now, maybe there are some, but they're not prominent in the party if there are, right? They're not the people who are being put up for high office and things like that.
Well, I think that they're appealing to, one, they're appealing to the base. I think that there are Democrats now. I think, you know, I would actually, I may be wrong, but I think that there's a lot of Democrats that still, you know, think that abortion is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when you get into the party. The party is going to go towards, really the candidate is subscribing to the party is really what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the party, the party is saying that, you know, we're talking about abortion, that, that, you know, a woman's right to choose is a human right. So yeah. If you're going to get the nominee, if you're going to be the nominee or you're going to get the go ahead by the DNC, you're going to have to run on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or else you won't get nominated.
You just, well, that's kind of, you just won't get, yeah, you just won't get nominated.
Yeah. That's so, kind of what I was trying to point out is, you know, those, there could be actual pro-life politicians who have been elected somewhere, but they're not, they're definitely not in like the national or even like governors, like they're just not getting those spots. Right. I mean, that's kind of what I was saying. And so back to that thing that you were saying about you used to be able to vote for the person rather than just the party, because on policy issues, people were much closer. So, I mean, there were obviously differences. There's always been differences between what a conservative and a liberal believes, but they were in the past, like, you know, 30 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago, maybe longer, they were much closer to the middle and less extreme. So there were differences, but they weren't like always deal breaker differences. So you could look at two candidates and say, I think, you know, I have these two men, because that's what it's been in the past. I think this is a better man, so I'm going to vote for that better man, right? And that could be the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't seem like we have that option.
So I'm glad we brought this up, because I think a lot of people think that. Well, here, I'll start with this. So I was watching one of my favorite comedians is Andrew Schultz. I think he's hilarious. And
never heard of him.
Yeah, and I was listening to him because he was on Jordan Peterson's podcast, and I really like listening to Jordan Peterson too. You know, for what it's worth, but one thing that was really interesting that Andrew Schultz said was he says that the parties are actually the identity of the parties are defined by the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, the actual practical majority of people that are subscribing to the parties are closer together.
Yeah. For sure.
And I thought that was really interesting, because it does make sense, because
you would never know it by looking at social media, though.
Well, you would never know it because the other party wants to control the narrative of the other party.
Right.
And they're only going to bash the other party.
And it's nothing but misrepresentations from one side to the other.
And I think that when
and back.
And I think, exactly. And I think what's interesting is shoot, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. I got thinking about something else, and I saw something on OBS. But anyway, I remembered. So what I was going to say was, I think it's interesting because a lot of people, you know, obviously the Republican Party is, you know, Christians trend. You know, mm-hmm. I would feel comfortable with Christians
majority,
trend.
Yeah.
The majority of Christians for sure. Trend to vote conservative, vote Republican.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people on the left think that, and I'm sure that there's Christians that vote for the Democratic Party too, but it's almost like the right or the Republican Party gets this we're the Christian or godly party. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think that's true.
Right.
I don't think either party should be defined as like, oh, this is the party that is like sought after God or mm-hmm. anything.
Both
like
are
that.
Seeking power.
Both are seeking power. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to go policy by policy, running point to running point. And view that through the lens of truth, you know, mm-hmm. abortion, you know, you can't vote for that if you're a mature Christian. If you know that, if you have any knowledge of the Bible, you know, murdering children is wrong.
And that's exactly, and you know, just to say clearly, that's exactly what abortion is.
That's exactly
that's
what
not
abortion
a misrepresentation.
Is.
That's no. not an exaggeration. That's exactly what takes place.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to me, and I really enjoy politics because the main reason why I enjoy it so much is because nowhere else in the world do you get to be in charge of your government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are the authority as the people of the United States, and it's just fun to get in and be a part of electing your leader and knowing and trying to figure out who you're going to elect. And you know, it's honoring to God to do that because no authority, and this is kind of what we touched on in the Avatar podcast, is no authority comes to power unless God allows it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to honor God, then we must vote because we're in charge and he gave that authority to us. So I really enjoy it. And I also think it's quite humorous. I think it's really funny sometimes, especially with Donald Trump. And you know, I guess that's a good segue because he's running. He announced his third presidential campaign a couple days ago. So I think it's gonna be interesting.
So we got a YouTube comment since you brought up Trump.
Okay.
It's not on the either of the videos that you asked. You know, I think you had a short. One was DeSantis or Trump, and then you segued into talking about the podcast, Watch What Podcast. But I had one. It was a clip from our No, it wasn't from the Avatar episode. What? It was from... where was the clip from? Oh, it was... there are two parts to the gospel, part two.
Okay, yeah.
So it was a clip from that episode, and we got a comment on it. The short was called How Christians Destroy Their Influence. And so it talked about, you know, a Christian claiming to be Christian, a person claiming to be Christian, claiming to be a Christ follower, but when they go home from church, they, you know, commit adultery or they abuse their kids or abuse their wife or they run out on their families, you know, things like that. So the inconsistency of claiming you're a Christian while also doing all these other things. One of the comments that came up, and I don't know if this is actually a person because the name just says testing, 1, 2, 3. But if you believe this, you should believe in holding Trump accountable for his affairs, lies, and hate. You can't pick and choose if you're telling people they can't either reap what you sow, I guess. What do you think of that?
So I think I actually have a lot that goes through my head with that. I'm going to try and organize it since this isn't rehearsed or anything.
Right. It's kind of off the cuff. Wasn't planned at all.
So I'll say this to start and then maybe we'll unpack that. But I think that a lot of... there's going to be some assumptions here. I'm assuming that this person's not a Christian. Because the question mark at the end of that comment seemed sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you said that person's, you know, name or whatever that's called, the tag out loud. So if we get that wrong, then, you know, we apologize, but we don't know you. Just from reading that, that's what my assumption would be. And I think that, you know, I tend to think that people who are not Christians, when a Christian talks from a position of morality, they take it as it's our morality, if that makes any sense. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's well, that's what you believe. And yeah, it's what we believe, but it's not our defining moral code. So they're being mm-hmm. defensive because they have a you know, we'll call it a subconscious presupposition to moral relativism, and they're being defensive and they're pointing at us saying, don't shove your morality down my throat or hold me to that account, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're doing. we're saying that there's an objective moral truth. There's an objective moral truth to this specific topic. And we like this candidate, but he can still be wrong in his actions, you know, when mm-hmm. like throughout life, no differently than we would do for any other candidate. And I think that, I don't know, is any of that making sense? It's kind of fumbling through it a little bit. But yeah. I think that there's a disconnect in the objective understanding that this is something that we follow because we answer to someone who wrote morality versus the belief of, you know, I write my own truth and they write their own truth, but I don't want to hear the Christian's truth, or I'm going to argue against it or use it as a way to your candidate, like Donald Trump, if you voted for Donald Trump, sinned in this way, so therefore you can't vote for him anymore. And I think that that's just lack of understanding on their end, because not a Christian in the world, not a true believing mature Christian in the world would say, I voted for Donald Trump because of his affairs.
Right.
Or I am overlooking Donald Trump's sins.
Or I think his affairs aren't a problem.
Right. Or that. Or I'm overlooking his sins because I think that he is, you know, everything he does turns to gold or whatever. No, you can be a good president, you can be a good candidate, but still, it's no different than, you know, the founding fathers. The founding fathers had slaves.
Mm-hmm.
But can they do something wrong at the same time they produce something amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer has to be yes.
Yeah.
You know, they can have slaves and be morally, you know, so far off the mark. But at the same time, they can write documents that gave birth to the most amazing country ever.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, and they may not have had it figured out at first, but by the way right. that they wrote it.
They didn't understand how to apply that equally to everybody.
Right.
They didn't have that part down.
Right.
But the principles that came out.
Yeah. Were very biblical. you know? So I don't know if that's the best way to answer that. But I kind of would unpack it that way, that you can't refute Christianity from a place of moral relativism, because it's not we're submitting to the authority and the objective moral code that God created. We aren't the ones that created it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an important distinction to make. I would say that I would prefer no one cheat on their spouse.
Yeah.
You know, but that also doesn't mean that I'm not going to vote for them for president if they're the better candidate for the job.
Right. So I would, and this is another assumption. I could be 100% wrong about this person, because there are plenty of Republicans who, you know, they were labeled the never Trumpers and they didn't want, they wanted nothing to do with that. Like, right. So they were Republicans. But regardless of that, you know, based on the comment, you can make the assumption that, okay, is this person a Democrat? Are they liberal, or are they at least leftist leaning? Like, you probably can make that assumption. But, and I think your assumption about whether or not they're Christian could be accurate too, obviously without knowing for sure. But I would follow with a question to that person if I could. And maybe they're listening to this right now. Who knows?
Yeah.
And maybe this will actually be a question to them. I don't know. But I would say, what does it mean to hold him accountable for his affairs? What does it mean to hold him accountable for his lies? How do I do that from a distance that I am from the man?
Yeah, I think that the result, I don't know what he would say. I guess I could only assume that they believe that his lies of, you know, being, you know, in bed with Putin and the whole Russia thing.
So maybe it does mean he shouldn't be president. Like maybe there are aspects of his character, aspects of his life means that he should not be in the position that he had for 4 years and he's going to run campaign for again. But should not be is a statement that comes from when you have an ideal situation, right? So I can say something should not be a certain way.
Yes, that's, yeah, I like that.
But what are my other options is the question that we have to ask.
And the truth of it, and the way it works out practically, is one side you have a guy that cheated on his spouse and, you know, lies, whatever that means, according to the comment. And then on the other side of the option list is someone running on the rights of women to murder their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it looks like practically. So,
right.
How do you choose?
Right. And that's the thing. That's so you have to weigh, just like we said, you weigh the policy, what type of policy is going to be enacted. And that's what I'm going to vote for is the policy decisions that are going to be enacted. And that doesn't mean, always that one side is so far above the other and that it's an easy choice. It's not always an easy choice and it shouldn't be an easy choice. But so to take it even further, so the first question is, okay, how do I, someone who has never met the man, will never meet the man, will never have any interaction with the man, hold him accountable for things like affairs, right? So that's one thing I would say. The other thing is, who actually has the authority to hold him accountable? Who would?
Well, I mean, our answer would be eventually one day he will be held accountable.
Yeah, for sure. That's the long view answer, but short term. You could say,
I mean,
so
right,
like,
now he's married.
You could go
so,
voters.
So
voters have,
yeah,
the
voters,
authority to
Congress,
hold him accountable, say we don't want,
yeah,
you in the office, right?
Congress and you know, the checks and balances of our government. You know, they tried to impeach him twice and it didn't stick, so.
Right. So the part that's not in the clip that this person was commenting to was, so this was, you know, it was kind of a rant about the church allowing people to claim to be Christians while their lives didn't
match up
to that claim.
Right.
Okay. And then you asked, in response to that little rant, you said, well, whose problem do you think that is? Whose fault do you think that is? And what was said, the answer is, well, I guess it's pastors, right?
Right.
So if someone claims to be a Christian and their life is not matching up to their Christian beliefs, it's their pastor's role. It's their pastor's authority to confront and hold them accountable to the faith. That's what a pastor's role is. I am not Donald Trump's pastor. I cannot hold him accountable for him sinning in a certain way.
Right.
Now, maybe this person is talking purely about voting. I can acknowledge that Donald Trump sinned the sin of adultery, right? That is certainty. But whether or not I vote for him, it's not holding him accountable for that sin. I can twist it in my own way of thinking. I can twist it in my own mind that this is just my way of holding a man accountable, but I have no authority to hold him accountable for that sin. That's right. Not my place.
Right.
That's not my place to hold him accountable. If I was able to interact with him and engage with him, we can talk about his sin. I can ask it. I can talk about repentance and try to do that. But that's the job of a pastor. That's the job of a person who has spiritual authority. And I don't even know if Donald Trump is a Christian. I know he said during his campaign that he is. If he is, or if, you know, if that was a true claim, then at the very least, he's very new, right? He's not a mature Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, and I think one problem, so I will give this person a little bit of credit and not just say the comments way off base, because I think I did see a big problem with way too many Christians speaking about and alluding to Donald Trump basically being, this is probably a bit of an exaggeration, but a second Messiah. Like there were lots of Christians who just kind of bought into Trump in a way that made him seem like a God-sent savior for America. And that was detrimental, because he's not that. He's a man running for office, seeking power. He's a man that we have a choice of whether we'll vote for or whether we won't vote for. But he is not a representative in any way, and we should not accept him in any way as a representative of Christianity, because he's not that. And he will never, he can't be that. He's a candidate that we have to weigh and consider, is his policy going to be good versus is this other person's policy going to be good? And I don't want to vote for either one maybe, but which policy is going to be better? And that's what I'm going to go for. But there were tons of people that propped him up like he was, that he was some type of savior, Christian savior for America, to allow Christianity to thrive and stuff again. And I think that was detrimental to, at least when I saw that, and I feel like I saw it quite a bit. But yeah, I just think that was detrimental to the way that Christians were viewed during that election process.
You're a bit older than me, but I'll ask you this question. When did it become like mainstream to not be able to say like, okay, this candidate I really like, but he did these things wrong. This candidate I don't like, but he did these things right. And, you know, if I'm being completely honest, you see this more on the left, to where they don't like a candidate and they do nothing wrong. Or I'm sorry, they do nothing right. You know, and I think on the right, you tend to see it, you know, it's still majority wrong. But from my perspective, the right usually has a little bit better of a moral path. You know,
or at least their agenda aligns a little more
correct.
Closely.
Yeah, maybe yeah. That's a better way to say it. But you know, the right tends to call a spade a spade. You know, this is good Trump or bad Trump. You know, mm-hmm. This is Biden or, you know, good Biden, bad Biden. It just so happens that the goods are few and far between. You know, when your president nods off at the climate change conference, you know, and he falls asleep. So, I don't know. I just, it's a big deal to me to get to help Christians learn the Bible so that it affects their lives and voting is a part of their lives. And, you know, what we're seeing right now is, you know, the vote, you know, it was supposed to be this giant red wave and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the people that voted want to continue to see inflation happen, want to see more economic downturn. It's either they are that fooled or like that indoctrinated, or they really have an issue with the Republican Party.
Yeah. I think that could easily be the case.
There's no other way around it. And I also have an issue with the Republican Party because there are a lot of talk and nothing ever really gets done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I can't vote for abortion. I don't want to vote for higher taxes, you know, but you are kind of pigeonholed into, you know, couple options until the other parties figure out a way to make a run for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Interesting, though.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
I'll actually
I
add
love
another...
the debates. I love the debates.
Yeah, I'll add another kind of...
two TVs in my living room. I put two TVs up, and I watch the debates, and then I watch commentaries of the debates. I think they're hilarious. I think it's so much fun. I have watched...
From an entertainment perspective, or do you feel more informed afterwards?
Both. It's a double whammy. I get to double dip a little bit, because... I get the commentary, and which is, you know, more on the comedic side, and then I get to watch the debates, and, you know, Trump's funny. I think Trump's hilarious. I don't actually agree with a lot of what he says, and I don't really agree with his tactics, but I think it's funny.
The first debate between he and Biden in 2020. I was embarrassed to even see a clip of. Like, I couldn't keep watching it.
Oh, no, 2020 was really bad. 2020, yeah. I don't think Biden actually won the debates in 2020. I think Trump lost them.
Oh, for sure.
I think Trump.
He did a terrible job.
Trump needed to retweak his strategy a little bit, and he needed to be more presidential. He used the same tactics, the strategy that he did in 2016, and didn't work. And I think that he, you know, he's already kind of doing the same thing right now in 20 that he did in 2020, when, you know, like, he, you know, right before the midterms were over, he's on the media bashing Ron DeSantis, and, you know, just doing his Trump thing. And I don't think it's healthy for the GOP. I think that he needs to be more presidential. He's not, it's like, the Larry the Cable Guy, Jeff Foxworthy, what's their tour called? Again, I'm forgetting. The Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
Blue it. Collar. It's funny, because somebody was doing a roast to somebody, and I think it was the roast of Larry the Cable Guy, and one of the people asked him, like, so how much more money do you need for it to not be the Blue Collar Comedy Tour anymore? So, and I think that is, there's a lot of similarities there too. Trump can't be the not politician guy that's coming in using a battering ram, because he's been the president.
Yeah.
So he has to change his way of approaching other candidates. And
I don't think he can.
I don't think
he has it in him.
I am skeptical that he will actually win.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I won't vote for him, but I'm a little concerned that he'll do more damage this time around than he did good. I think he was he's probably the best president that I've seen in my lifetime, because of everything that he did policy-wise. But this time around, I don't know. I think he needs to tone it down, and he needs to stay. He needs to talk about what he did when he was president more than he needs to bash other people, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I think he needs to bash on Biden, because
he needs to not complain about anything, and he needs to not bash people.
Yeah, he shouldn't bring up that the election was stolen. He shouldn't bring up any of that. He should just, you know, show up to the debate, and his winning points are, you know, the best unemployment rates, the best amount of jobs added. You know, he just needs to talk about what he did and all of those policies that brought so much life back to the economy, back to the country at that particular time, and then let the Democrats talk about January 6th until, you know, maybe that's all they have, you know. So I don't know. But I think that's good enough for the politics talk.
Yeah.
What did you think of
Hold on. I was actually going to add one more thing, and this could actually be, this might be able to, this could be a segue. But so you gave two options for why the red wave didn't materialize. People either just want all of this inflation and stuff, or they just hate the Republican Party. I would also say that the average person doesn't understand, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way whatsoever. There's people have a lot to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. And the average person just isn't going to have a huge grasp of, yes, inflation is happening, but what causes it? What policy that is in government causes the inflation to happen? So rather than vote for individual policies and the boring way of doing things, it does come down a lot to what story can the candidate tell? And how can their positions together into a story? And the reality is Democrats do that much better than Republicans do.
That's exactly right. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
Democrats are really, really good at connecting on a personal level to capture votes.
Mm-hmm.
They're great at it.
Yeah.
And
the problem is that it seems like they don't care after they get the vote.
Well, they don't. Because, I mean, we just saw that recently where Biden was going to push through the student loan forgiveness thing, and it went to the Supreme Court, and they said it was unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but people voted for him based on the
voted
fact
for
that,
him that, yep,
that was going to come.
Exactly
right.
Yeah. So I just, from my perspective, I see the Democratic Party being more of the party of more of empty promises. But, you know, I say that, and then we look at the Republican Party and how often did we see with the 2020 election that, you know, Rudy Giuliani and those guys were going to unleash the Kraken? It was like, we're going to unleash the Kraken, we're going to flip it, and it's going to be this big thing, and we're going to drain the swamp, and all these promises, and then what happened?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So it is on both sides. So I think that, you know, just to kind of conclude and kind of recap a little bit, the best thing a Christian can do is get into the Word, read the Bible, and align themselves with God's definition of morality, and then pick the candidate that best fits that.
Yeah.
Policy by policy, that's what
you
got
to do. To the
best
of your ability.
To the best of
in
your ability.
That particular election.
And I'll add that as long as the Democratic Party runs on expanding abortion rights for women, no Christian, no actual Christian or follower of Jesus should ever vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you could say, so I don't think this is on the same level as what you just said, but you could also say something like Christians should not vote for a man who continuously has affairs, right?
Well, yeah, I would not disagree with that.
But when you have the options in front of you, somebody who says that their policies will promote life.
Well, to make your contrast more accurate, I think we have to say that you have on one side abortion, and then on the other side you have a man who committed affairs,
mm-hmm.
because, to our knowledge, we don't know that he is continuing to do that.
True. Fair enough. Yeah.
You know, he's within a marriage. He's been in that marriage for, to my knowledge, quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got children and, you know, within that marriage with Melania. And Melania seems, from our perspective, to support him mm-hmm. very much. So she just tweeted out that she can't wait for her. You know, I'm sure it's a PR thing and all of that. But
surface level.
Yeah. But surface level, you can only take it for what it's worth, and mm-hmm. and I just think that, to your point, to be accurate, a man who has committed affairs and abortion, you got to go with the guy that committed the affairs, because mm-hmm. you're looking for the chocolate chips in a poop sandwich, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the the lesser of the two evils.
Yeah.
At that point.
Because your only other option is just to abstain and not vote. And then you're not really helping anything in that situation either. Now I will say this.
Well,
your vote
is the way is the best way that you can control the outcome. Your vote is directly linked to honoring God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on you. What the candidates do is what the candidates do. Back to your point on how do you hold them accountable for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not voting for them is not really holding them accountable for that.
Yeah.
Like for their
unless
for
it's
their
directly
own sins.
Related to, you know, they did a terrible job as president, so now the whole country says we're not going to vote for you anymore, right?
Right. I mean, well, which is why happen. Bill Clinton got, you know, booted. You know, if we're gonna take issues with presidents who commit adultery while in office, then we should probably have that same standard when you're voting for a president who hasn't been in office.
Fair enough.
Because why wouldn't they do the same thing when they're in office? It's an integrity thing.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. So
speaking of storytelling.
Did you like The Quiet Place?
I love The Quiet Place.
You do?
Love it. Yeah.
Why?
I think it is absolutely fantastic. I think it is one of the, and I know you don't. So I know what I know. I know you're going to disagree.
You don't know
with me,
what I think. You don't know.
I honestly think it is one of the most well done in so many ways movies I have seen in probably the last 10 years. Now, I'm not putting it on, like, I'm not saying it's the best, because I don't have like a list or anything like that. I'm not making a list. I'm not putting it up there. I'm just saying, after watching it, my experience when I was done, I said, like, my thoughts was, wow, that was good. Like, it was a fantastic, fantastic movie. And I can get into more detail in a little bit, but I'm just going to leave it there and then let you say what you want to say.
So I'm going to quote Alex. Ask me if I liked the movie.
Did you like the movie?
Eh.
Okay. Yeah.
That's an inside joke for those that are listening. We went and saw, what was it? Was it?
The Dark Knight.
It was The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And Nick and I just came out
way
of the
back
movie.
In 2008.
Yeah, we came out of the movie theater. We went with Nick's buddy Alex, and we came out of the movie, and Nick and I were on cloud nine. We were like, "Oh man, that was so awesome!" We were recapping scenes, and we were like super intense and passionate about the movie. And then we looked over at Alex, and we were like, "What do you think?" And he was like, "Eh." And we just were like, "What?" So that was interesting. But no, I think that from an entertainment perspective, I think the movie was really good. I think it was entertaining. I think it was fun to watch, but the whole plot, I just, nobody would survive that long. I mean, the movie would have been over. I mean, those things, I mean, you know how hard it is to be that quiet? And with the baby, like, I think it was a valiant effort with the oxygen mask and trying to soundproof the basket, mm-hmm, or whatever that thing was, but then the whole plot point of the waterfall, and like we can make noise because we're around the waterfall. Well, why wouldn't you just move there and just live there?
Well,
and then you have less, your risk is reduced.
But what, at the beginning of the movie, it says it's only been, what, like 300 days?
I think it's something like that, yeah.
Something like, so it's not like it's been 10 years where they could have built a community on the waterfall.
Yeah, but it's been long enough that they could go and put tents out there and live by the water. I mean, if that type
maybe,
of alien creature
they, you know, their
was hunting me.
Surveillance and things like that. And I don't think they presented it like if you live near the waterfall, it was only when you were actually right there, basically in the waterfall. So maybe you could put a pillow and a bed there or something, but I don't think
so
they
that,
presented
if those,
it like...
If those things were real, and you knew that if you were on the banks of the waterfall, mm-hmm, that you had the best chance for survival.
But I don't know that if it was on the banks.
But what's the difference if you're in the waterfall or if
because
you're...
Because the waterfall is to the volume that it drowns out all other noise.
Yeah, but that's gonna happen if you're on the banks of the waterfall.
I don't know. I don't have a meter to go. I didn't pull that out to
go
measure the sounds.
You're biased.
No, what I'm saying is it doesn't matter.
Oh, it does matter.
Like, it doesn't matter to the story of the movie whatsoever.
Well, it does, and because it makes the story of the movie stupid if they don't just move to the waterfall and live there.
Because there's no reason to believe that just living close to the waterfall is good enough.
It is. It was good enough because it was the whole point. Now, they were in the waterfall, but...
Right,
but
that was the whole point.
But the
whole point was...
Yeah, but they could have moved near it, and the sound is not going to be that much different. Now, if you're a mile away from it, then maybe you have a point. But
it would
it's not going to... Nah.
Have
I can't get on board, man.
Have you ever been to Waterfall?
I've been to Niagara Falls. It's loud.
Okay. Do you think it would be the same if you were in it as opposed to outside of it? You think it's louder if you were in it or louder if you're out on the side?
I'm not arguing that it's not, like, from a decibel
right.
perspective.
So what I'm saying is there's no reason to believe that it's the same in both places because it is different. So it's not, and I'm not saying that it's not, doesn't require some suspension of belief. I'm just saying that there's no reason to think that it's the same.
No, I'm not arguing.
So if
from
it's
a
not
decibel,
the same, then there's room for a reason there.
It's just a very, very
and
small amount
think,
of room.
I think you're making a mistake by saying if they existed in the real world, because that doesn't even matter whatsoever.
Mm. Well, I was using that as an example of in that situation, you would want to do everything you can to survive. And if and the amount
of room,
but it's
not a survival movie.
You're
not,
not
what it is.
It is a survival movie. It's
no,
a
it's
be
not.
Quiet so those things
it's
don't
eat
us.
Absolutely not. It's an allegory about being deaf. That's what it is. The entire point of the movie, if you watch it, is trying to get the viewer to experience what it's like to not be able to be in a place where you hear.
No, I understand.
And
that.
To come into that. Come in to actually. It's actually trying to bring you to a point of empathizing with a person who is deaf.
No, I totally understand.
Okay?
I get all
that's
that.
That's the entire point. So everything, every plot point is to serve that purpose. Okay, just like in Narnia, you can find plot holes in Narnia, but those things aren't what the story's about. That's not the story.
I understand, but if the plot points holes in plots don't make good movies.
But it's not a hole.
It's a hole.
It's to say that if this happened in the real world, this wouldn't work this way. That's not a hole.
I'm saying that the amount of room for suspension of disbelief is not as big as you're thinking it is. That's what I'm saying.
Why?
Because if there's any chance, so like, and I know I'm talking about this point because it's a big deal to the movie because he said it was like, oh, they can't hear you, it drowns out their noise. If it was even remotely greater survival rate to move next to the waterfall, even though it's not the same as being in the waterfall, you wouldn't be living on a farm out in the cornfields. You would be moving to the waterfall, and part of a movie is to get the, you know, I mean, you can't just say all of these plot holes are irrelevant because there's a bigger theme to the movie, because then why not just make every plot point not make sense to point to a bigger point of the movie?
No, what I'm saying is within the world that they set up, it's not a hole.
I don't know.
I'm still not
buying it.
What I'm saying is the flaw in your saying it's a hole is that you're saying, and I think you're exactly right. If this were to happen in the real world, that's what you would do. But it's not happening in the real world. It's happening in the world that they set up in their movie. So it's not inconsistent with their world.
Yeah, I still think that part of I can get on board with that a little bit, but I still think that you could use that for a lot of movies that you've disagreed with in the past.
Can you give me an example?
The Dark Knight Rises.
But that's actually a plot hole.
But it's not because it's
no,
okay
it's because
in that world.
Do what?
It's
no,
okay
no,
in
no,
that
no.
world.
You're not understanding. You're not understanding. It's consistent with their world. The problem with The Dark Knight is it's inconsistent with its own world.
How?
Because a character is one place and then is a completely different place.
But
it's not,
of
it's not established
Nick.
In their world. No. It's not established in the world that he can go back in time and not know where somebody is. That's the problem, is that there are two scenes out of order.
I wasn't talking about that scene. I was talking about I thought you said something about the plane. I was thinking about something about the plane or... It would be helpful to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, I don't remember saying anything about the plane.
I wasn't specifically, because I would agree with you on that scene.
So I don't, with that, I don't remember having any complaints other than the movie just wasn't as good as The Dark Knight.
I thought there was another scene. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. Okay, I retract my objection.
Okay.
I retract my objection. But I still think,
I'm not saying maybe I haven't, but what I'm saying is a plot hole is something inconsistent with the world that the movie is creating.
When I watch A Quiet Place, I want it to be as real as possible so that I can relate to them in that scene. And when they talk about the waterfall and me relating to that, regardless of the allegory,
mm-hmm.
I want them to do what I would do.
Oh, yeah, I don't watch movies that way.
Realistically, I want it to be as realistic as possible. You know, I want it to be, you know, I mean, it's just more believable that way.
Hey, I just don't view movies that way.
Now, I think there's truth to what you're saying.
I want this to be like it would be if I were in this situation.
Well, maybe I worded that wrong. I don't mean like me specifically. I just mean like what the common sense person would do. And if there's an option that's better than living on a farm in a cornfield, then the majority of people, everybody would be living next to the waterfall.
I just don't know that that's actually established in the movie, that just being closer is good enough. Being under is. But I just don't think it's established that being closer is good enough.
I think it's really fun to disagree. This is our first disagreement in the podcast.
Yeah, I'm just saying, as soon as you leave the waterfall, they have to be quiet again. It's not like they could just continue yelling as long as they were close.
Right, but they weren't. I think if they can yell as loud as they were yelling, you don't think that it's any different than, you know, being 5 feet away as opposed to being completely submerged?
Well, I don't think you can build a whole home 5 feet away. I don't think you can have all of your life within 5 feet of a waterfall.
Yeah, I think that they could have built a home, some makeshift whatever. Tent. I mean, that's better than living in a house.
I don't
where there's no sound.
I think that's the case.
I think it is, man. I think it is.
I think this is you saying that's what I think should happen, so it should have happened in the movie.
No, according to what they said, it's if you can yell and scream inside the waterfall.
Maybe you would have been able to talk at just a normal volume, but yeah, there's no reason to think you could still be as loud. Like, you would actually be safer, because unless you're intentional, still, you still have to be quiet.
Right.
You still have to generally be...
But the odds of them hearing quiet. You... So even if, you so, still have, so if you were near the waterfall, not in it, but near it, and you had... Let's say the, you know, just for the movie's sake, you could yell and scream in the waterfall. But if you built a house, you know, 20 feet off the waterfall, you know, 50 feet off the waterfall, you could talk at a normal volume.
I don't think you could. I don't think the waterfall would be loud enough at that point. But I get where you're going.
And then you continue to remain silent, but you had the buffer. That's completely logical.
But the buffer is not enough. It has to completely drown you out, or those things hear.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think it's logical. I think that's why there's
a problem. Sound frequency works.
Yeah, but it wouldn't drown you out, but it would, you know, okay, so then why don't those things live near the waterfall? Because if they hear sound, why wouldn't they hear the waterfall and just live near the waterfall where they hear things?
Because they hunt. They're predators. They go to where
I don't
they,
remember in the movie. Is it specific to human noises?
No, animals.
I don't remember.
One of the monsters
grabbed
takes
the deer,
a,
right?
Something. I can't remember what the animal was, but some type of animal, yeah. A couple different ones, I think. So it's not just human noises. It's animal noises, too. But it's both.
I don't know. I still think it's a plot hole. But to your point about the allegory, that's the really good part about the movie.
Yeah. I mean I think it does an amazing job of doing all of that. And even more than that, whether it wanted to or not, and I'm sure you would argue that it didn't want to because it's a Hollywood movie, it more than maybe any movie that I've seen promotes the value of family.
I would actually go farther. And I think that it's actually one of the very few movies that accidentally displayed the patriarchy well.
Mm-hmm.
And what a father can do and sacrifice for his family, I think it was brilliantly displayed.
Yep.
I don't think they did it on purpose.
Yep.
But I think they did it.
And I think that's my biggest takeaway from the movie as a whole, is the storyline is from, I guess, I mean, it takes off right at the beginning when the kid has the toy rocket and it makes the sound, and then the monster comes and grabs him, and the daughter that is deaf blames herself for that and feels all this guilt about that because she gave him the rocket, and then questioned whether or not her dad loves her anymore throughout the entire movie. She mm-hmm. questions whether or not her dad loves her. I have messed up. I have screwed up so much. My father cannot love me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds what familiar. Does it take for that father to show his love?
Death.
To prove to mm-hmm. her that he does, in fact, love her? Sacrifice and death. And that is perfect for the, like, that is an exact replication or
it's like they
mirroring
ripped, yeah.
of
it's like
the gospel
they ripped
story.
It right out of the Bible.
Right. We are guilty, and we are rebelling against a God who created and loves his creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we are rebelling against that God. And how does that God prove that he loves us and that he wants us to be with him? It's to send his son, Jesus, to die on our behalf. It's a death. It's a sacrificial act of
absolutely.
Willingly putting himself on the line
mm-hmm.
so that we can be saved. And that's exactly what Jim Halpert does in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to throw the applause in there for you. It was good stuff.
Yeah. It's really, fun. I mean, I, and maybe it's just seeing that maybe I'm willing to ignore everything. Maybe there are tons of plot holes. You know what? Maybe I am biased, but because I see that so clearly, I'm just excited about the movie and we'll watch it over and over and over again. And I absolutely love it. I think it's suspenseful. I see that connection there. I see the strong family. I see all of that. And it's just, I don't think I've seen a movie that does it as well.
I don't either. See, that we can agree on. That we can agree on. And I think Quiet Place 2 was even better.
Yeah, it was good too.
I think it was really good. If not, it's either as good or better. Because
See, but that's just because you were able to get over your
the
your
waterfall thing.
The water. Yeah.
You're probably right. there wasn't a waterfall in the second one.
Still the same world though.
One less plot hole. No, I really, really liked the second one, but we'll leave that one for another podcast, right?
Yeah.
I don't really think that there's much more to say about the movie. I thought the creatures were you know, made well. You know, I thought that here's another spin. And you can jump in when you want, but I think it's interesting cuz you know, you talked about daughter feels like she doesn't measure up, and it takes dad dying to prove that he still loves her. There's a sacrifice. And then what's even what they didn't stop there. Because what the father left behind was even more valuable, and that was hope.
Mm-hmm.
He left behind, you know, the ability to create out of her hearing aids the weapon that led to their freedom, that led mm-hmm. to their you know, solving the problem of this alien race.
Right.
And that was hope. And that's exactly mm-hmm. what, you know, Jesus came, he died, and he there, you know, by grace alone there's hope. Mm-hmm. There's a freedom. You know, if you choose to follow him. So, you know, it's just it was really good. That those aspects of the movie were good. And you know what? I'll even concede. that it's good enough. It's good enough to overlook the other stuff, but I still think that they're plot holes.
Okay, fair enough.
It's good enough to overlook the other stuff. It was really good. But like the waterfall and the nail, I just can't get over that stuff.
What about the nail?
The nail, like. I don't know.
Because she steps on it,
She steps on it and then falls. I don't think that the birth, like, there's no way you're going to be that quiet while delivering a baby.
She does scream.
She does scream, and the fireworks were good. The fireworks were good.
And that even goes back to the waterfall thing. They set up that, they established that something louder in close proximity will drown you out, right?
Right.
So the fireworks are what draw the attention.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that the waterfall draws the attention, or doesn't. I don't know. I don't really know the whole waterfall thing.
But that's my point, because the waterfall, like, they don't go to the waterfall, like they go to the fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that they
because it's constant, continuous.
So they just are used to it.
Just like I hear my air conditioner or HVAC system running, and I get used to it and forget about it.
But fireworks, I guess the point in the movie, fireworks would be more equivalent to the firearms than the waterfall.
Right.
So I think looking at it objectively, I gotta at least give it that. So a firework is going to be more like a cannon or a firearm.
Sudden explosion of sound.
As opposed to the waterfall. But I think the waterfall thing could have been written better. But the rest of the movie was written really well. What do you think of like the acting and the portrayal of the characters?
Top notch.
You do?
Yeah.
I think the best acting. Well, I'm gonna ask you. I wanna know what you think first.
I think it's hard to choose. I think
if you had to pick one for an award, best actor, who would it go to?
Probably the daughter.
I agree. 100% I agree. Yep.
Yeah. John Krasinski's beard is pretty epic, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't grow a beard like that.
I think his beard might deserve an award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he had the same beard in 13 hours.
Yeah,
it's just an epic beard.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think the daughter deserves an award. That was so good. I'm not really familiar with her name, but I think she did really, really well. I think the boy did well. If you had to pick a worst.
I don't know if I can.
Can you not pick a worst?
No, I don't think I can.
So let's talk about this because A Quiet Place came out, and then shortly after, Bird Box came out.
Bird Box was not good.
Why, Nick?
There's no suspense.
No?
No, I didn't think so. I think where A Quiet Place succeeded was that it made moments feel suspenseful, whereas Bird Box was just kind of the same. It kind of appealed more to just, what's the word? Tropes, standard suspense tactics, rather than actual real suspense, because you felt like characters were actually in peril or in trouble. So I just, because of that, I couldn't get into it. I just was never captured by the suspense. I love the concept of the movie. I just couldn't get into, it's like one of those. I think one of my complaints about The Dark Knight was that it's a movie that was made before the script was done, or it seems like one. The script should have been rewritten a couple times to iron things out, to make sure everything was really, really solid and good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bird Box was kind of the same way. They had a good concept and then didn't really flesh out the screenplay much. So to me, the characters didn't matter much. Characters didn't, like, I didn't relate to them. I didn't care about them. When someone died on screen, it was just they died on screen. It didn't mean much.
Yeah, and it's hard to relate to a movie and like it's hard to relate to the threat of something evil when you don't ever actually see it.
Right.
You know, most
if you have strong moments where the suspense feels real and the characters feel like they're really, really terrified, then it can work like Jaws. That was the big thing of Jaws, was like you never saw the shark until near the end of the movie. And that's like a classic movie because the suspense of not seeing the shark. And I think it could have worked in Bird Box. It was just the characters themselves were not, they didn't feel real. Whereas I think in The Quiet Place, I can think of tons of dads that I could say I see in John Krasinski's character in A Quiet Place.
Right.
Like,
yep.
I could think of countless dads that are kind of like, that would act like him.
Right.
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 And do what he did. I can't say that about, I just feel like I couldn't say that about Bird Box and the characters in Bird Box.
Yeah.
And both the flashback scenes and even Sandra Bullock and all that stuff.
Right.
So that's my thoughts. Did you like it a lot more?
I hated it.
Okay.
Absolutely hated it.
The way you were reacting, I thought maybe I'm telling you that like I hate your favorite movie of all time or something.
No, I hated it. I thought it was stupid. I thought that the storyline of, you know, I kind of agree with you where it was like it could, there was something there. They just poorly executed it because like she called him like the boy, she called him boy, and then she wouldn't name mm-hmm. him because she felt guilty, and there was too much drama with like the balance of drama and suspense was off with a little bit of the terror, because with a Quiet Place it was horror, but it didn't feel like horror.
Right. You were worried that these characters you like might not make it.
Yeah, and I didn't like her.
Yeah.
I had no connection to her. So I think that's why Bird Box fell flat. And I think that seeing is very, very different. Like portraying those things is much, much more difficult with lack of sight than lack of sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you can't see something, it's just not there.
Right.
But with sound, you can manipulate sound differently. Like sound design is a whole piece of creating a film.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's easier to do that, and it's much more compelling for lack of a better term.
Right. And you're just in Bird Box, you're just watching a blindfolded Sandra Bullock move down a river, right? I mean, there was flashback scenes too.
I think the movie would have been better if when the blindfold went on, they did something to the sound design if there was a way for her to take the blindfold off and be safe, but then when the blindfold goes on, we see black as the viewer. So right. we
maybe glimpses of things.
Yeah.
But never the whole thing. Yeah.
You know, or show the whole movie with a blindfold, but then you could see through the fabric of the blindfold a little bit to see mm-hmm. because you the whole point
to
of
see shapes and
the whole point of a Quiet Place is that you are deaf with them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do hear something, it's way over dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
With Bird Box, there was no relation there because we weren't blind with them.
Right.
We could see, but we never saw the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't see, you know, you weren't a part of the story.
In some ways, if they had a good design, it'd be better if the audience could see the monsters, if that's the way they were going with
it. I agree with that.
Because you see something that the characters don't, which means you're going to feel suspense when they start making decisions you know they shouldn't.
Right.
Because you know something they don't.
That would have made the movie way better. Is because we aren't blindfolded, we get to see.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But, cool. Yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed the podcast on A Quiet Place. I guess we got into Bird Box a little bit. Politics. Be encouraged. We appreciate you guys listening. Again, check us out on social media. YouTube is the video podcast. for the audio only. We are pretty much everywhere. Google Podcast, Apple, iTunes. Or I'm sorry, Apple Podcast is not called iTunes anymore. and then Spotify. And then again, if you're interested in supporting us, we have a Patreon page. So you can check that out as well. We will see you next time.